welcome to Unscripted Wrestling. I am your host, Daniel Hummer. I'm here with my brother, Doug, and some friends, Eric and Stevie. How's everyone doing tonight?
Pretty good.
Good.
Dang.
Good. Good.
Sweet. Very good to hear. Tonight we'll be doing WCW Halloween Havoc 1995 for our retrospective. This is coming up soon, so it's sort of an anniversary thing. And it's spooky season, so
yep.
We might as well do a Halloween Havoc. Before we get too deep into anything, Doug, you want to hit off some plugs?
Okay. A lot to plug here. Listen to Anthony. God damn it, I keep forgetting he left the show. Anthony the
Boxman and Smart.
Thank you. First day with my new tongue. Listen to Boxman and Smart, the Dirt Sheet Dudes, every Wednesday and Friday night around 10:15, 10:20-ish p.m. Eastern Time. Usually after whatever wrestling's on that night, Mixler.com/dirtsheetdudes. Son of a bitch. I forgot to change the time on the plug I did for this show earlier. So people might not know that we're on.
An hour late.
Yeah. That's the main reason why I went on the computer. They can be found on all podcast platforms, Spreaker, Stitcher, iHeartRadio. I believe they're on, Google. So listen to them. They're good people. Boxman, I believe, is actually going to be helping us out with an upcoming show, which I'll plug in just a minute or two. All right. Listen to us Friday nights. I think we're going to start going on a little earlier, so we're not competing with SmackDown.
Yeah.
Obviously, as you could tell, we're on at 7 o'clock tonight. Because, you know, we don't want to lose our audience to SmackDown. So between 6:30, 7 p.m. Eastern time here on blogtalkradio.com/everythingunscripted for the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast. Next week, we're still trying to kind of figure out the poll. Next week is going to be weird because Dango is going to be out of town. He's going to be getting drunk off his ass for his birthday. And I will be staying here at home taking care of the house like a good little housewife should. So next week's poll is going to be four wrestlers that the boss here will never let us do a show about as long as he's on the show.
Four guys that I absolutely hate.
Yes. Are we sticking with the one? Can I announce the poll, or are you still undecided?
No, you can announce what I had.
Okay. As of right now, the poll options are...
I have a quick spin on it, though.
Okay.
Shane Douglas is one of them.
Right.
Seth Rollins.
Yes.
Instead of Bret Hart, because I was thinking Bret Hart, but I don't want to get killed too much. Baron Corbin. And then who's the other guy I had?
Brutus.
Brutus the Barber fucking Beefcake.
All right. So the poll options for next week, and I'll put the poll up tomorrow in the Old School Wrestling Group. Eric, you can put the poll up everywhere else. Baron Corbin,
yep,
Seth Rollins. Baron Corbin, Seth Rollins, Shane Douglas, Brutus the Barber Beefcake. It will be a career retrospective on one of those four. If it's Baron Corbin, I'm retiring. But that'll be next Friday. Oh, dear Jesus. All right. This Sunday, 5 p.m. Eastern time, for the Top Tier Podcast, we are doing action movies, correct, Daniel? All right. Action movies this upcoming Sunday, 5 p.m. Eastern time, blogtalkradio.com/everythingunscripted for action movies. It's going to be fun. We were supposed to do that last week, but we called an audible, and we did a draft recap. This week is action movies. Next Sunday, 5 p.m. Eastern time, there will be no top tier because, like I said, baby boy here is going to be celebrating his birthday. So next Friday or next Sunday, 5 p.m. Eastern time, same channel, will be the long-awaited top 10 greatest cartoons of all time countdown. I have been counting cartoons for the last 3 or 4 days. Eric has been doing the same. I have been shifting through a lot of shit. It's like, you know, preparing for a garage sale, and you know what's going to sell and what's not going to sell. Probably a bad comparison, but who cares? But top 10 greatest cartoons of all time. We'll be plugging it all over the place. If you are still planning on giving me a top 5 favorite cartoons list and haven't yet, hurry the fuck up. Now that I said that, I got to hurry the fuck up, finish these plugs. All right, Dangle, you take it.
Halloween Havoc 1995. Now let's get right into it. We'll get into the background and stuff first, but...
Well, first, I just want to say this. This is very timely because of what NXT is going to do in less than 2 weeks. They're going to do a Halloween Havoc theme show.
Yeah.
And I love it. And I love the fact that they're bringing back Spin the Wheel, Make the Deal.
Yeah, that's cool.
I mean, they didn't have it for the Halloween Havoc that we're reviewing, but that was probably... I mean, despite the fact that they basically killed the idea with Jake the Snake Roberts and Sting with that fucking coal miner's glove in 92, they kind of brought it back in 93 with the Texas Death Match between Vader and Cactus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So, we're in a weird time in WCW because Bischoff's there, Nitro's kicking, and things are starting to fall into place, but we're not quite there yet, right?
No, because you're still sifting through a lot of shit.
Yeah, and there's still a lot of hokey shit. It still kind of seems like WWF Lite at this point. There is entertainment to be found here. Now, to kind of quickly breeze through the first 4 matches that were on Main Event, which was the basically the pre-show, right?
Yes.
Eddie Guerrero beats Disco Inferno in 3 minutes and 21 seconds. Paul Orndorff beat the Renegade. That was like their Ultimate Warrior ripoff, right?
Correct. And this was finally Orndorff getting his revenge for having to put this fucker over twice.
Okay.
Or 2 times in a row.
Good. Benoit and Malenko beat the Blue Bloods, which is Bobby Eaton, well, Earl Robert Eaton, and Lord Steven Regal.
Which actually was, I have it on a DVD, or it was on a DVD that somebody made me.
Yeah?
Yeah, and it's not here, it's back in Newfane somewhere. I'm pretty sure.
And then Chris Pittman beat VK Wall Street.
Right. Sergeant Craig Pitbull Pittman beat VK Wall Street, also known as IRS, by the way.
Yeah.
And what was actually funny is that the winner of this match, because sometimes they would do a deal where like they would have a match and then the winner would get like a big time feature bout on Nitro the next night.
Yeah.
The winner of this match would get to face Macho Man on Nitro. But then, because of events later on, Macho Man was not medically cleared to be on, so that person actually had to face Eddie Guerrero instead.
So, let's get into the first match here. To start this off, you got Johnny B. Badd versus DDP with the Diamond Doll and Max Muscle. And they kind of started off with a promo. Is there any other backstory to be had here for the television title?
Well, not necessarily a backstory. This was kind of the start of the feud.
Yeah.
And they would have several matches after. But obviously the backstory is Johnny B. Badd was supposed to challenge for the U.S. title. He didn't make it to the building. Turns out he had a flat tire. Diamond Dallas Page came out and made fun of him. Max Muscle, being a moron, because most muscle guys are, said, yeah, it's kind of hard to get to the building with 4 flat tires. So basically, Diamond Dallas Page deflated all, either that or Max Muscle deflated all 4 tires.
Yeah. And that was the corniest. That was such a corny promo, by the way.
Yeah.
When Johnny B. Badd was like, I didn't tell you I had 4 flat tires. And then he punches him in the face.
Yeah, I had a flat tire. And then, like, Paige didn't even go down. Like, they didn't even show Paige go down. They just showed him,
Yeah.
Right.
So that was pretty corny. But we get to the match. Steve, what are your thoughts on this match? Johnny B. Badd versus DDP.
I thought it was interesting, really. I thought it was an interesting match. I thought it was pretty good, you know.
Right. Yeah. Eric, you just saw this again today. What are your takeaways?
Yeah. I mean, the opening match was solid for what it was. And I'm surprised Donnie B. Bag was as over as he was. I didn't think he was that over.
Yeah, the fans were into him a bit. I think the Brew was kind of coming off the rose, but...
It was at the time. He was at his peak. Well, when he first came in 91, it was the whole Little Richard deal, right? And he was so flamboyant. But then 92, or about 93-ish, they gave him this new hit song, right? The Johnny B. Bad. And the the song was so fucking catchy. I was actually singing it to myself at work yesterday. And somebody walks in and goes, "What the fuck?" And I was just like, don't ask. Just keep walking.
should I ask who walked in?
To be honest with you, I don't even remember who it was. It was one of like three people. I think the weirdest part for them, though, was the fact that I was also dancing to it. So.
I have a feeling who it was, but I don't know.
Anyway, so they probably don't even remember it. Like I said, I don't remember who it was. But yeah, like I was singing and dancing, and it's just not one of my finest moments. Although those are few and far between. But no, I mean, the song was catchy, and, you know, he was, because he had proven himself, the character got over from the flamboyant character to now he's this tough guy and he's a great athlete.
Yeah.
So he got himself over. And the Johnny B. Bad as a flamboyant character was kind of, you know,
kind of interesting.
Bloom was coming off the rose, but still, they knew they could count on him to go out there and have a good match with people. The only thing I did not like about this match, you see the time of the match was 17:01, right?
Yeah.
On pay-per-view telecasts, the TV title time limit is only supposed to be 15 minutes.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
And by the way, one of the longest matches on this card, the tag match, which is actually has Sting and Flair in it, that went 17 minutes and 9 seconds.
Right.
So this is one of the longest matches on the card, too. And
because it was probably the best match on the card, to be honest with you.
The opener?
The opener? Well, it was one of the better matches. Not the best match, but one of the better ones.
I guess I'll be that guy then. I wasn't a huge fan of this. Only because, I mean, both guys aren't in places where I like them yet. DDP becomes the people's champion and who we know DDP to be, like a year after this, right?
Right.
A year, maybe
two.
Johnny B. Bad, I mean, I know he was really good when he first came in, and I guess he's still over here. He's okay. Mark Merrow's never impressed me too much. But DDP, these guys worked okay together. To me, the match kind of dulled a little bit at some points.
Oh, no, it was too long. I will give you that much.
Yeah.
Like, 10 minutes would have been just fine. I do think, however, the commentary during the match is what helped things.
Oh, yeah. Tony Schiavone and Bobby Heenan are spectacular.
When Johnny B. Bad hits the Bad Day, which, by the way, for anybody that does not know what the Bad Day is, the Bad Day was a combination. It was a sunset flip dive over the top rope. Then he throws a guy in the ring, and then he does a slingshot splash on the guy, and that's called the Bad Day. So when he hit the Bad Day on DDP and Max Muscle, the first part of it, Schiavone goes, "Oh, it's the Bad Day." And Heenan goes, "No, it's a bad night." Basically trying to say, you know, it's nighttime. It's not daytime anymore. So I just thought that was fun. I mean, I just ruined the joke by just explaining it, but
yeah.
But no, that was hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, It served its purpose. It was a decent opener. I think it went too long, but it is what it is. Johnny B. Bad gets the win, cuts another kind of corny promo afterwards, but he's the television champion now.
Yep.
Moving on, we have Randy Savage and one of the guys on the list of people I can't stand, Brutus the Barber Beefcake, going as the Zodiac.
Oh, God.
Doug, just describe the Zodiac character, the intricate plot of the Zodiac.
Yes, no, yes, no. That's all he said.
That's it?
Yeah. I mean, basically, that's what it is. Like, a lot of people say, okay, you know, it's a take off the Zodiac killer.
But is it, though?
No.
The face of, like...
I mean, he looked like a fucking zebra.
Yeah.
Right, absolutely.
Okay. And by the way, he wasn't even supposed to be facing Savage. It was supposed to be Kamala. But then Kamala apparently had some dignity left in him and decided, fuck it, I'm not going to... You know, like, why am I here?
Yeah.
So he left. I actually think he left like weeks prior to this. So they decided, okay, well, we'll just put Zodiac out there. They weren't going to have the match last that long anyway.
No, it was 3 minutes.
No, it says a minute 30. So anyway, so, I mean, the match sucked, but basically this match was just, if Randy Savage won this match and Lex Luger won his match later on against Ming, then they would go one-on-one against each other. So basically this match was just for Savage to go over so he'd have time to rest before he got to Luger.
And honestly, it was pretty entertaining for what it was. I enjoyed it more than the first match. Because it was quick. It was, you know, they fought. The fan jumped the barricade, which is crazy. So they fought on the outside for a while.
Well, they had to. They had to get the guy out of the ring.
Yeah.
And that was crazy.
Stevie, what are your opinions on this match?
Well, I wasn't really a big fan of the Zodiac. And I thought the match went pretty well. I would say it was a good match.
Kyle, what do you think, Eric?
I thought it was okay for what it was. Not the best.
Well, I mean, not the best utilization of Randy Savage either, but what he went on to do, he had a little more of a match later on, a little bit.
Yeah.
Yep.
So
they had to save him for it.
Any big takeaways, Doug? Or?
No, except for this was just a way to get, you know, Hogan's friend on the card. Hogan's friend being Brutus. Because Savage was going to go over no matter what. Cause Savage was still one of the bigger stars at the time. Because if you notice, they weren't necessarily booing Savage like they were booing Hogan. They still like Savage.
Oh, yeah. Everyone's like Savage.
Yeah. But.
So, my question, I got a question.
Cool.
How come they kept changing Brutus Beefcake's character in WCW?
I just think nothing was working.
They couldn't get him over, and they couldn't use the barber deal.
Yeah.
Because Vince owned that.
Well, what else?
Oh, yeah.
All right. So he was Brother Brutai when he first came in.
Okay.
Then the Butcher.
Yeah. The Starcade match.
Yeah. Then the man with no name, because they couldn't figure out a name for him. Unfortunately, I'm being serious. They didn't know what to call him, so they just called him the man with no name. Then it was Zodiac. Then the Booty Man.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Then the Disciple. Which, if you really think about it, that gimmick suit him best because he really was Hogan's Disciple.
Yeah, it was his little buddy.
That too.
Yeah.
I mean, really. I mean, that's of I mean, that's it. Why they couldn't, but like Daniel said, they really couldn't find anything to work for him.
Yeah.
Because his work, especially by like this time, in the late 80s and early 90s, his work was good because of the gimmick.
Yeah.
Okay. I know you don't agree with that, no. Daniel.
No, I don't.
But for anybody that was around then that was young enough and dumb enough to actually believe in what they were watching on television, you know, it was good. However, when it got to be 95, 96, you know, around that time period, nothing was just working because his work rate just got worse.
Yeah. And the gimmick really made him in WWE. The barber thing.
Yeah.
So when you don't really have a solid gimmick here, there's not much he can do.
Right, exactly.
I don't know if there's much more else to say. But Savage winning was cool.
Yeah. I still think, though, the fan jumping into the ring, they had no idea what the hell to do.
No.
When that fan jumped in the ring.
Yeah, they hesitated for a little bit.
Yeah.
Well,
go ahead, Stevie.
Well, that's not the only time it's happened. I mean, it's happened in Detroit before WrestleMania 3.
Right, I remember.
During the Roddy Piper, Adrian Adonis match.
Right. And that's the thing, too, is that, like, when that happens, and first of all, it's like the fan was going after Savage. He wasn't trying to go after the Zodiac. The fan was going after Savage. Which, Savage was a crazy motherfucker.
Yeah.
So if you take a shot at him, you better make sure it connects.
Yeah.
To where he has to stop.
Yeah.
Well, because, I mean, for those of us that remember, there are fans that have tried that on Savage and paid for it dearly, too.
Right.
Remember that guy that went in the cage? I forgot who he was. He facing Hogan in the cage?
No, it was when Hogan was facing Piper. And Savage was doing the run-in.
Yeah.
The fans believed that Sting was going to come out and help Piper. Nobody did. This fan happened to have Sting face paint on, so he was like, all right, I'm just as good as the next guy.
Yeah. He wasn't, though.
No.
He got his ass kicked.
He got his ass kicked because here's the thing. He would have gotten the jump on him because Savage and Hogan did not see him coming. One of the Sting imposters tackled him.
Yeah.
Tackled him and knocked him out. So then Savage and Hogan figured, you know what? Fuck it. This guy's in the ring. This match could not be any worse than what it already was. So let's just beat the shit out of the fan.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Exactly.
And here's the thing. Back in those days, because the fans still were, like, invested in it, and if they didn't like somebody, they were going to and they could get away with it, they were going to jump the rail and try to take a shot at you.
Yeah.
The problem is that, like, they think, okay, if I hit them, they'll go down. So, not if they're not supposed to sell it.
Yeah.
Now, luckily, and this fan, like, Savage kind of did take a shot at this guy, too. Which the guy didn't sell because he's not supposed to, right?
Yeah.
But security tackled him, and he had no choice but to sell that.
Yeah. All right, so let's move on. We got Kurosawa. Did I butcher that?
No, you...
with Colonel Robert Parker, and he beats Road Warrior Hawk. Eric, what are your thoughts on this?
I'm surprised that Hawk came back from that, because it looked like he broke his arm when they showed did he break it?
I don't know
he
if it was
broken, right?
I don't know if it was actually broken. I know there was some damage done. I don't know if it was an actual break.
Yeah, I mean, he sold it really well, so I thought it was broken.
Well, and we talked
about
it.
I'm surprised he actually came back that soon.
Right, and we talked about it 2 weeks ago, how good Hawk was at the sell.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I thought it was a solid match. I thought the wrong person won, but that's just me.
It was a shit finish. First of all, Colonel Robert Parker, like, None of his guys in that era should have ever gone over.
Except for when he brought Harlem Heat in.
Well, when he brought Harlem Heat in, that was fine. But it's just like, no, yes, the wrong guy won. I will say that because this was supposed to be a revenge match.
Yeah.
And it was stupid.
Yeah.
I mean, it was short, which, to be honest with you, this match could have gone longer if they wanted it to.
Yeah.
I mean, this match, you could have added a couple minutes out of this and have Hawk win. Could have shaved about 5 minutes off of Luger and Ming. Trust me, the fans would have been okay with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was okay. What were your thoughts, Steve?
Well, for one thing, if it was a revenge match, how come you didn't let Hawk win that match?
Exactly. That's why I said wrong 1-1.
Right.
Unfortunately, Eric Bischoff's not returning my phone call, so I can't really get an answer.
Okay.
We missed our lunch date.
Sorry, Jeff.
Well, I just think it's kind of stupid. You know what I mean?
Darn.
No, we agree.
Yeah. Hawk should have went over here, especially because he was still over, which is surprising as a babyface. He got a big crowd reaction.
Yeah. Well, and he was over too because, you know, Sting basically was helping him get over. Because, yeah, he was kind of a regular partner Sting for a little bit.
Yeah.
Because him and Sting were always friends.
Yeah.
And I think they were trying to work out a deal. They were trying to get Animal in.
Yeah.
But Animal was still pissed off at Hawk for using the Power Warrior thing in Japan.
Yeah.
So Animal still wasn't budget. So, but yeah, I mean, again, I think we can all agree that Kurosawa should not have won this thing, especially since they were already starting to give up on his push.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So moving on, and a match that's weird that it's not a WCW pay-per-view, right?
Yeah.
Because when I say this match to anybody, I don't think this is the company you think of.
Right.
Sabu against Jerry Lynn, Mr. JL at the time, with the Sheik in his corner. What do you think, Doug?
I actually enjoyed this match.
Yeah.
But it was too short.
Yeah, that was the only one I'd say. Like, the other short matches, like Zodiac and Savage, I'm cool with that going a minute 30. But this could have gone 10 minutes.
You could have easily attached 5 more minutes to this deal.
Yeah.
And it would have been good because it was full of action and all that. And the Sheik throwing the fire at the end, which, by the way, you could tell that the Sheik was getting up there in age because he missed. you're supposed to throw fire in the eyes, right? That's the illusion of the fire. It's supposed to go in the eyes. Well, first of all, it's kind of hard to throw something in a guy's eyes when the guy has a mask on that covers the eyes.
Yeah.
So Sheik's just like, all right, he threw it in his mouth.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I don't want fire in my mouth.
Who wants their tongue to burn?
No, nobody.
Right. I do burn my tongue a lot. Yeah, which does hurt, by the way.
Yeah.
Okay. But no, this match could have easily gotten another 5 minutes to it, and I would have been happy. Because this actually was a good match.
Yeah, it was really good.
I feel weird saying that about Mr. JL, even though we know how good Jerry Lynn is. He just got stuck with a bad gimmick.
Yeah. Sabu, though, he was still Sabu here, you know? There's not
right,
much of a change.
Right, but they had to, you know, put a leash on him.
Yeah.
So to speak. He couldn't do all the crazy shit he was doing in ECW.
No. But it's cool to see. You know, it stands out. What do you think, Steve?
Between JL and Sabu?
Yep.
I thought it was okay. I mean, I wasn't really disappointed in that kind of a match, but Sabu was also coming from ECW, if I'm right, am I?
Yeah, he was, I mean, Sabu had been fired in, I want to say it was July or August, maybe even June of 95. He got fired because he double booked himself. He was supposed to be at an ECW show, but he also had a Japan commitment.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, back in those days, like even going back as far as the 90s, and it actually happened a lot too in the territories, guys double booked themselves all the time.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't have managers and shit.
Right. They didn't have people really booking their travel. I mean, that would be like the point of like a Bobby Heenan or Jimmy Hart or stuff like that. But, you know, back in those days, like back in the old territory days when it was like Gary Hart and Skandor Akbar, a lot of, they were too busy booking to booking shows to book your travel.
Yeah.
So how many times, and I swear to you, people call Dick Murdoch one of the toughest guys, you know, one of the greatest tough guys of all time, right?
Yeah.
You know how many times he's double booked himself and never got shit for it? I mean, they gave him shit for it, but also, too, if you try to give him shit to his face, he'll just look at you and be like, you want to say that again?
Yeah. I don't want to piss him off.
Yeah. So, I mean, it happens.
Yeah. Now, going on to, this might be a quick episode today. We're really getting through it. But going on to Lex Luger and Ming, which I got a lot more enjoyment.
Did you get Eric's opinion on Sabu and JL?
We'll circle back. Eric, what did you think?
I thought it was an all right match.
Great insight. All right, can we move on now, Doug?
Yeah. Yes.
All right. Lex Luger. Something that I really liked this match. Lex Luger and Ming. It ended by disqualification. For two big guys, and Ming's not really known for his work. He's known for being stiff. I thought these guys did a pretty good job. They beat the hell out of each other, but it was fun to watch.
They always had really good chemistry. Like, if you watch their WCW matches through the years, like, they were stiff. Well, Ming was stiff because Ming would really lay it into you. Even when he liked you. Luger, you know, he knew how to throw a couple of taters. But they always had really good chemistry. Now, the finish of this match was really stupid, but if you go to the end of the pay-per-view,
it makes
you
sense.
Understand it.
Yeah, and it's not as stupid as the end of the pay-per-view.
No, it's not. I mean, for as good of a match it was, and again, like I said earlier, you could have shaved 5 minutes off this match and given it to something else. But still, I mean, the match was good, and it served its purpose. Luger obviously wins to get the match against Savage.
Yeah.
But yeah, no. Like I said, the finish, like, if you look at the finish, you're just like, okay, this makes no fucking sense. Because Taskmaster, obviously the finish is the Taskmaster. Ming has the pin after hitting the spike, or hitting Luger with the Asiatic spike. Taskmaster goes, and then he goes for the pin. Taskmaster comes in and kicks Luger in the hand, which warrants a disqualification.
Yeah.
Yep.
So Luger gets the match against Savage. And everybody's just like, why is Taskmaster causing his own man to match? But it makes sense later on. So,
exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was enjoyable. Like I said, I always thought these
I liked
were really
it.
Great chemistry.
Yeah, and you didn't want
I like to build up to the storyline.
You know?
No, because I think Ming was on a roll still at this point.
Yeah. So not pinning Ming makes sense.
Yeah.
Steve, what did you think?
Between Luger and Ming?
Yes, sir.
I thought it was great. I didn't actually think it would lead to Luger joining the Dungeon of Doom. Yeah, thank you, Eric. Dungeon of Doom.
Yep.
I thought it was pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, and it was. Spoiler alert, by the way, because we haven't gotten to that part
yet.
No, I'm glad because I kind of forgot.
Yeah. But, and it's actually also funny, too, that these two guys, they beat the hell out of each other on this pay-per-view, and just the next night on Nitro, they teamed with each other in the main event to take on the American Males.
Please tell me they won.
Yes, Luger and Ming won.
Okay. Thank God. So I don't skip over you again.
I thought
this
was the best storyline.
Cool.
I thought this was the best storyline in the pay-per-view, that Luger joining the Dungeon of Doom.
Right. I mean, I don't know if it's necessarily him joining the Dungeon of Doom as more as it is just him taking Jimmy Hart on as a manager.
Yes.
I think he was an insurance policy.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Which I'm fine with because Luger's a dick anyway. I like him as a heel.
Yeah.
He's a good heel.
Oh, he was better as a heel. Yeah. I mean, people did
get
behind him, though, as a babyface in WCW.
Not
WWE,
WWF,
not in WWF, no.
He was a better babyface than WWF.
No, he wasn't.
Oh, you don't? Oh, okay.
Nah.
With the Lex Express? That's like known for being a failed gimmick.
I think that's the first time I watched Lex Luger, that's why.
It was okay. I preferred the narcissist thing they brought him in with, because that was more him.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was.
Okay. I don't think I've watched that one.
I mean, in NWA, in the NWA before even WCW, he was set up to be a great babyface with the Horseman thing. Because whoever, like Michael Hayes said, whoever you put in that role and turn face on the Horseman is going to draw money.
Yeah.
Whoever you put in. But he did really well with that, him and Flair.
Him and Flair. I mean, the fact that they teamed him up with Sting.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand. I mean, I kind of do understand it. But wouldn't it have been great in WCW in, like, 88 if they did the War Games match and it was the Horseman and JJ, obviously, versus Sting, Luger, the Warriors, and Ellering? I mean, I get it. Like, Dusty always had to be part of War Games, right? Because it was his creation.
Yeah.
But Luger, the Warriors, Ellering, and Sting would have worked just as fine.
Yeah. I mean, you don't need Ellering.
Well, if Dylan's in there, then yeah, you got to put Ellering in there.
Yeah.
I can't take it back. I don't. This is the second best storyline of the night.
Because of what we got coming up next?
Yeah. I forgot. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the best match of the night, I think we can maybe agree on this. Up next, we got Sting and Ric Flair. They end up beating Pillman and Arn Anderson by DQ. Steve, I'm going to start with you. What were your thoughts on this match?
I would say it was pretty interesting. I didn't think you all knew Flair was going to turn on Sting during the match. So
yeah, the build up was great.
Yeah, I think it was good. You didn't think it was going to happen though, but it did happen.
Yeah.
The way the build up to this deal, and when they had the match on Nitro 2 weeks prior, and the fact that Sting didn't come out to the very end because Sting figured that then Flair was going to turn on him.
Yeah.
So Sting didn't come out. He waited for Flair to get his ass kicked. Then he came out and saved the day. And it's just like, okay, fine. And then Sting telling Flair, if you turn on me, I'm going to beat the crap out of you.
Boy, so he said to Flair, He said the Flair, I'm going to leave you for dead. That's what he said.
Exactly. I mean, those are the exact words.
Right.
You know, and again, because Flair had turned on Sting, by the way, so many times.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's like a joke around that Sting was booked as the stupidest professional wrestler of all time, just for how many times he trusted Ric Flair.
Right. So, it's just... But, and then, like, at the beginning of the program, when they said Ric Flair had been attacked, it's like, okay. And then Flair didn't come out. And then Flair came out in the street clothes. And Sting busted his ass and sold his ass off in this thing.
Right.
And then he's screaming. He goes, "Nature Boy." And Flair's just like, "I'm here, buddy. Don't worry. I'm here."
Yeah.
And it's just like, okay, well, you have that assurance now. You know, Flair's, for anybody watching this for the first time, it's just like, okay, good. You know, he's shouting this thing. He's like, "Don't worry. I'm here. I'm here. I got you." And then he punches him when Flair gets the tag. And it's just like, you motherfucker. And it's just like, even me watching this again, even though I've seen this so many times, so I already know, but watching it again, getting invested, and it's like wanting to just be like, you know, "Flair, you son of a bitch." But then seeing Sting lunge after him. And Sting versus Ric Flair is going to go down as one of the greatest WCW rivalries of all time.
The greatest wrestling rivalry of all time. One of them.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, I don't think Sting will say, or Flair will say that Sting was his greatest opponent, but I know damn well Sting will say that Flair was his.
Yeah.
I think that's a great idea for a tier list, greatest rivalries.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in the next board meeting.
Yeah, I might look at the group chat. What really surprised me and entertained me on this was Brian Pillman. Like, he's so damn underrated. And the fact that, like, he was such a good heel. And this is even before his kind of loose cannon stuff. I mean, I know he was getting there, but this is just him as a kind of a classic heel. And him and Arn worked pretty well together, honestly.
Arn Anderson is the greatest tag team wrestler.
Yeah.
One of the greatest tag team
wrestlers. I love Arn.
Look at how many partners he has had over the years. Ole, Tully, Barry, all the times him and Flair teamed up.
Yeah.
You know, Roma. Gloss over the shitty ones, you know, Roma.
Dusty.
You know, Brian. Or obviously, you know, Brian Pillman. What's another one?
Did he ever team up with Dusty?
No, he's never teamed up with Dusty.
He was usually beating the shit out of Dusty.
Right.
Okay.
You know, him and Benoit.
I just asked
were,
that because
were
the Vince connection with Cody.
Okay. But he is probably or Larry Zbysko when they were together.
Yeah.
Bobby.
Yeah.
God, if I forget that, that was actually one of my favorite Arn Anderson tag teams. Arn Anderson and Bobby. And if I were to forget that, I'd be a complete dipshit.
Wow.
Who's the best?
Arn's best partner?
Yeah.
A lot of people are going to say Tully, but I'm going to say I think he had the best chemistry, to be honest with you. I think he had the best chemistry with Zbysko.
Really?
Yeah. Because Arn Anderson can get the job done and all that, and Zbysko wouldn't shut the fuck up.
Yeah. Who do you think was
I do have a question.
Partner? Yeah. Go ahead, Eric.
Oh. How many tag team titles did he win? How many tag team titles did he win with different partners? So how many? Basically, my question is,
oh shit,
how many times did he win the tag team titles with different partners?
Well, he was the tag team champion with Ole, the tag team champion with Tully.
And Tully. Yeah.
Then Zbysko, then Eaton, then Roma.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's it. So he had five different partners.
Yeah.
Wow. That's impressive. Very impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah, Daniel, go ahead and ask your question again.
No, it's over.
Yeah.
But,
Daniel.
No, it's okay. I have a fan. I'm a huge fan of him and Tully together.
Right.
Him and Ole were okay, but I'm a huge Ole fan. But, yeah, this match was really good. What are your thoughts on it, Eric?
I liked it. I thought it was my favorite match of the night. I thought the chemistry was good. The storyline, the builds, everything. Just even watching it again, just knowing that Flair was going to turn, it was just a good build.
You got anything you want to cap off on this before we get into the technical masterpiece of the night?
Just the fact that this feud obviously continued between Flair and Sting, you know, with a match on Nitro, and Sting really started to show off the aggressiveness. And again, I'll say it again. Well, I'll say it the way you said it. Flair versus Sting is probably one of the greatest. I think it's the greatest WCW rivalry of all time. You called it the greatest wrestling rivalry of all time. It's definitely up there. But it's definitely the greatest WCW rivalry of all time.
Did Sting drop the U.S. title to him?
No. It was funny. Sting was the U.S. I'll say this real quick, and then we can move on to the Sumo Monster Truck match.
Okay, we got time.
Sting was the U.S. champion at the time. He didn't wear the damn bell out to the ring.
Yeah. It is that.
And it's weird because around this time in WCW, a lot of these guys, even when they were champions, unless they were defending the title, they never carried the damn thing out to the ring with them.
Not even DDP?
Well, he defended the title. Well, DDP was defending the title, so yeah, he had to take it out there.
Oh, yeah, because he was TV champion, so.
Yeah.
And he lost.
But yeah, so.
All right.
Next.
One of the greatest wrestling matches to ever take place. Hulk Hogan and the Giant in the Monster Truck Sumo match. Eric, I'll start with you.
Yeah. I have really nothing to say about it.
Well, that's fine. And like my old saying goes, me and Jerry the King Lawler both have this saying. If you don't have anything nice to say, come sit by us.
Yeah.
So what negative do you have to say about it? It sucked?
Yeah. I mean, at the time, it was 1995, so it worked in 1995, but it wouldn't work here in 2020.
I don't even know if it worked in 1995. I mean, the Big Show looked kind of cool. I mean, the fact that he fucking fell off a building and then comes back a match later. Steve, what do you think?
Yeah, really, what would that sell? I'll say this. They really emphasized that Andre the Giant was his dad, wasn't he? I mean, I know he wasn't his dad, but...
That was a storyline.
That was a storyline. Yeah.
You know what? One of the biggest stories on WCW television was the switch to the dark side of Hulk Hogan.
Yes.
Right.
And that was very interesting to me because, you know.
We all know what happened after that.
Right.
Well, yeah.
Okay. It was foreshadowing.
Why did they switch Hulk Hogan to the dark side instead of Hulkamania?
Because, you know, it's Halloween Havoc, and he felt like he had to go to the dark side to fight the Dungeon of Doom.
Yeah.
I mean, he was back in the red and yellow a month later.
Yeah.
He looked
but
cool
it was just funny how he was wearing black.
Yeah.
And a year later, he's...
Right. So, like, here's the thing about this Monster Truck deal. For anybody that was a fan of Monster Trucks, this match was for you. Okay?
Yeah. Which was Eric Bischoff, by the way.
Yeah.
He's a fan of that shit. That's why he loves Sturges and stuff and motorcycles.
Yeah.
He likes vehicles. This is Bischoff's wet dream.
Exactly. I thought the thing was... I mean, it was stupid. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, it was stupid.
All right, and they're hooked bumper to bumper, right?
Yeah.
And it's just like they're saying, oh, you know, one of these guys could go off the roof. And Bobby Heenan even said, he said to Schiavone, he goes, if you and I were hooked bumper to bumper and I pushed you off the roof, I would go too, right? And he goes, and Schiavone's like, yeah. And he goes, so then why the hell would you want to push somebody off the roof if you're hooked to him? The fact is that Bobby Heenan was more than likely tanked.
Yeah.
during the show, and he still made more sense than anything that was fucking being seen on here.
But the thing about this match is, if you think about it, it's a bad gimmick match, right?
Yeah.
But if you think about the worst gimmick matches in history, you know, Kennel from Hell.
Punjabi Prison or whatever the fuck?
Punjabi Prison, the blacktop thing with Dustin.
King of the Road, yeah.
King of the Road, yeah. Even fucking the Bray Wyatt thing with Randy. The
House of Horrors?
House of Horrors. Those are usually not entertaining to me. They're so bad, I just can't watch it. I can get some enjoyment out of this. It's stupid, but watching it, and Hogan and Big Show, and you can tell Hogan actually wanted Big Show to be something. You can tell he saw something in him. Because
right.
He wouldn't have gone through all and this effort.
And we're not even talking about the matches coming up, you know, in a little bit.
No, no. I'm just saying I got enjoyment out of the monster truck thing itself.
Yeah.
I thought it was somewhat entertaining. It was stupid, but it was entertaining.
They shouldn't have done the deal at the end where he threw him, where he kind of pushed him off the roof, which he didn't even push him off the roof. He just took his hands off him, and Giant's just like, it's like King Kong falling off the fucking building.
I would have been more fine with that if they would have just did that at the end. But why have him do that and then come back, and then why have the Yeti be the big reveal at the end? Or the Yeti. So, yeah, I mean, I guess that was that match. Let's move on. Randy Savage and Luger. I'll start with you again, Eric. The big payoff here, you kind of, we were spoiling it earlier, so
yeah.
Get into it.
I thought it was a solid match. I mean, I think these two had good chemistry. I mean, I don't know if I'm wrong, but I thought it was a good match. Maybe not one of the better, but it was solid.
I mean, you're not wrong.
I mean, they didn't have much time. But
they didn't have a lot of time. They would be given more time. But also, too, Savage actually did have a legitimate arm injury.
Yeah, and he wrestled two matches.
Yeah, he wrestled two matches. By the way, that arm injury would basically – he did not take time off until the following October to get that wing fixed.
Damn.
Wow. That's when he joined the NWO, right?
No, he would join the NWO in February of 97.
All right.
Yeah. Steve, what was your big takeaways from this?
From the Hogan Giant thing?
Savage and Luger.
I thought it was good. Didn't really have no complaints about it, really.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, there really is no reason to complain about it. And they had Jimmy Hart coming, which, again, Jimmy Hart coming out plays into the story later on. I mean, nobody could figure out why at that point, but it would play in later on.
There was a lot of fucky finishes on this pay-per-view, though, if you really think about it.
I don't think any of these matches were clean.
Except for Johnny B. Badd. I mean, I know Max Muscle.
Max Muscle clotheslined DDP.
Yeah.
I think the only clean finish was Savage and Zodiac. Sabu and JL.
Well, didn't
Sheik threw the fire after
the match, yeah. But yeah, it was a lot of fucking finishes here. I mean, I know WCW kind of gets known for that at some point, but yeah, it's just weird. Good match, though. I like both guys. I'm cool with Savage winning. Let's go on to the main event. We might actually finish in time for SmackDown. But the main event here, we have the Giant with the Taskmaster, who's somehow alive now.
Shivani's reaction was the greatest. He came back from the dead.
Yeah, he's back. And he beats Hulk Hogan by disqualification. Does he win the belt?
It would be explained 8 days later on Nitro, because he left with the belt, right?
Yeah.
And then he came out. Nobody bothered to explain it, even though they showed the fucking footage on Nitro the next night. Nobody bothered to
elaborate as to why he took the fucking belt with him. They waited until November 6th on Nitro to announce it, and that's when Jimmy Hart came told him the plan is that like he put the clause in the contract because he had power of attorney.
Yeah.
That if Hogan got disqualified, he would lose the title.
Yeah.
Now, they waited 8 fucking days to tell us this shit, even though they did an in-ring promo with them the next night. This is how stupid these people were.
Yeah. They weren't there yet. The company wasn't...
And here's the thing. Sullivan's in charge of this shit. He's the head fucking booker. And this is a segment he's a part of.
He's a part of like 17 segments on the show. He probably forgot.
Like, this is your main segment. This is, it has to do with your world title, and you're one of the main focal points. You little troll.
And he's one of the best WCW bookers, too.
Exactly. And therein lies the problem. For God's sake, I'm just 25 fucking years old, and I'm getting hot.
Well, isn't that one of the reasons why Brian Pillman left WCW because of the booking?
That's one of the main reasons why everybody left WCW. It's because of the booking. I mean, if Pillman had a lot to do with because he felt like he could do better in the WWF at the time.
Which he did.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the match itself,
It was a classic Hogan versus a big guy that doesn't know how to work yet match.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not going to disrespect the Big Show because the Big Show...
It's his first match.
Yeah. He hadn't wrestled yet.
It's literally his first match.
This is his first fucking match on paper. First fucking match altogether. And it's on pay-per-view in a main event against one of the biggest draws of all time.
Yeah.
We don't know if that guy can work.
And he really couldn't yet. He was still very green.
He couldn't even do the chokeslam right yet. That's why they usually only had his match last like 10 seconds so he could do a chokeslam and then leave.
And he kind of moved weird. He didn't look really like a giant. Like he would, the way when Hogan would punch him and he'd cower a little bit.
Yeah.
He didn't have it together yet.
Right.
Which is fine. I mean, that's more on them for putting him in the main event than it is him. So we got to get to the end here. Where Jimmy Hart turns on Hogan.
Yeah. Hogan hits the leg drop, right?
Yeah.
And they have it to where you can't see Jimmy Hart doing it.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you see Randy Anderson go down. And Heenan and Schiavone are like, what happened? Like, why is the referee down? And then Schiavone's like, did Jimmy Hart hit the referee? Because the fans were pointing at Jimmy.
Yeah.
And Heenan goes, why would Jimmy Hart hit the referee? Hogan was winning. And then they pick the referee up, and then Jimmy Hart throws the referee down again and then attacks Hogan with the belt. Giant gets up, puts Hogan in this shitty fucking bear hug, and then then Taskmaster comes in and starts laying it in. And then Luger and Savage come out, right?
Yeah.
Savage goes right after the Giant, and Jimmy Hart hits him with the belt. A very weak belt shot, by the way. And then they cut the camera to the entranceway, and the Yeti is walking down the aisle. And then they come back in the ring, and Luger's stomping the shit out of Savage. And they're just like, oh my God, look at Luger, look at Luger. And then the Yeti and the Giant double bear hug Hogan. The way it looks, it's just like it looks like Hogan's getting double penetrated.
Oh my God, I knew that was coming. You couldn't just say it was like a Hogan sandwich or something, PG?
What's the rating on the show?
R. So Doug, how would you book the Yeti if they ever moved forward with him? What would you do with the Yeti going forward if you were in the booking meeting?
I know what I would do.
He didn't ask you.
I would book it to where his matches would be short. Maybe a minute and a half, 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Give him a move to do that we know he can execute. Maybe like a suplex or a brain buster, stuff like that. Or maybe even just a boot to the face.
Yeah.
And that would be it.
I have an idea.
Oh, boy.
Was Rey Mysterio there yet?
No.
Well, you got to bring Rey Mysterio in. And then you build a six-month feud between the Yeti and Rey Mysterio. And then you build it to Starrcade, and you do a mask versus gauze match. And Ray's got to unwrap the whole Yeti to beat him. Because that's not a Yeti. It's a fucking mummy, dude. Like, if you look at him, I mean, he's just – he's got toilet paper all over him.
Yeah, a Yeti.
Quit saying it.
A Yeti is fucking – It's a fucking creature in the fucking Antarctic or something like that, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, fictional, but yeah.
Wasn't the Yeti like a stupid character, though?
I think that's what we're getting to, yeah.
Yeah. It was very stupid.
Yeah,
well,
very
I mean,
stupid.
They never did it again, so it tells you how stupid.
See, he
right.
had one more
yeah.
appearance at World War III. And he was the first fucking guy eliminated in that 60-man battle royal.
That's a build. Eric, you got any big thoughts on the Yeti?
I would have fired him. I would have fired him. It just didn't. It looked weird.
Yeah. It's something you would expect from WWF.
All right, now to
yeah.
be fair, let's be fair, though.
How?
We're making fun of them for doing this, but yet a month and a half later, almost 2 months later, Hunter Hearst Helmsley was getting backdropped in pig shit.
That was different, though.
You had a guy covered in toilet paper and a guy getting dumped in shit.
That could have been a tag team. There you go. That's a tag team. They can call their finisher the last wipe.
Right.
you guys got anything else on Giant and Hogan or
Stevie? What were your thoughts on it?
Giant and Hogan.
Yeah.
I thought it was a good rivalry. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. It became.
They just based the Giants, like he was the son of Andre. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, because that's what basically
yeah, trying to make him like Andre the Giant almost.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
I thought
it was good though.
Yes. Yeah, we can.
We're going to do some final thoughts on Halloween Havoc 95. Eric, I'm going to start with you. Your final thoughts.
Okay. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it for what it was. You have to think about it. It was back in 95, so it's not what... I guess old school wrestling. I enjoyed it. It wasn't too long. It wasn't too short. It was a good 3 hour... It was three and a half hour pay-per-view. If I had to give it a rating, I would give it a solid 7. It was enjoyable.
All right, Steve, what's your rating and final thoughts on the pay per view itself?
Well, after watching the pay per view on the WWE Network like several times, I thought it was an interesting pay per view, to say the least. I would approve of it.
All right. Doug, your final thoughts.
Sometimes you have to take the bad with the good.
Yeah.
And there was some bad on here, but there was also some good.
Yeah.
Shivani and Heenan's commentary was good. It was great, like, for most points or whatever. They were a good commentary team. They did not need the third person when they got Dusty.
No.
Okay. I mean, I know people are going to say, Dusty being on the team was great. No, it wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, I liked it, but
it was okay in some parts, but you didn't need it. Johnny B. Badd, Diamond Dallas Page, yes, it was slow in parts, but guess what? It was good for what it was.
Exactly.
You know, it was a good moment for Johnny B. Badd. The whole Flair turning on Sting deal was awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, Sting looked like a boob trusting Flair again, but... we got to this. Again, you get good with bad, and that's unfortunately the wrestling business. Like, Hell in a Cell next week. There's going to be some good, there's going to be some bad.
Exactly.
I mean, like, even watching SmackDown now, you get some good with some bad. Right now is bad. Especially with the fact that there's a Canadian fruit fly that holds the Intercontinental title.
Are you still doing final thoughts? Or?
Yes. Oh, no, the point the point is that I just wanted to take a shot at Sami Zayn. But no, this was a decent pay-per-view. Yes, it had a shit ending, but, you know, it happens.
My final thoughts were, it was kind of a mediocre pay-per-view, but there was some fun to be had here. You know, it might not have been a technical wrestling masterpiece, but you could tell WCW was building towards something.
Yeah.
So, it's going to be, it was good. I enjoyed it for the most part. There was some things I didn't like, some things I did like. Overall, I'd probably give it a 6 out of 10 stars.
I give it 6.5.
So, that was Halloween Havoc 95, and that was the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast. You guys got anything else, or?
Just next week, or the poll's going to go up probably tomorrow for next week.
Right.
Pay attention to that. Your four options are going to be Seth Rollins, Baron Corbin, Shane Douglas, Brutus the Barber Beefcake. Either way, we're going to be digging piles of shit. This Sunday, obviously, blogtalkradio.com/everythingunscripted. We're tier listing action movies.
Yes.
Next Sunday, the 25th, the big top 10 greatest cartoons of all time countdown. I've actually got 6 more lists that I have to cipher through.
Yes.
Good grief. That makes over 230 lists now, by the way.
Damn.
Have
fun.
Thanks. You picked the right week to go on a vacation. So a lot of big things happening. Also, remember, Wednesday nights, 6 o'clock Eastern time, you're going to see you're going to hear Eric Klinoff and I for the Hard Hits show.
Oh,
although Wednesday
that.
Night is usually when I have the most technical difficulties.
Yeah.
It's always
I'll
show
you off the air speaking. We may have to change a little bit this week.
Why?
Klinoff has to work on Wednesday.
Yeah, tell me off air.
All right, guys. Yeah. We're going to head home then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Stevie, Eric, thank you guys so much. This is awesome.
Yep.
And Dougie, we'll see you guys next week.
All right. Take it easy,
we'll
guys.
See you Sunday.
Yep.
Bye.
Later, boys.
Behold the king. The king of kings. On your knees, Dougie.